Welcome to Parents' Perspective.
We went to China about a year and a half ago, and we went to operate at the Hebei Children's Hospital. And when we got there, we saw a bunch of cases that we were going to operate on, and there was one child that had been in the hospital for 2.5 years. And we examined the child, and the child had an unusual type of hole in her heart, but not something that was uncorrectable. But by Chinese standards, for some reason, because they don't have as much communication as we do, their tradition had told them that these things were uncorrectable, and that child was sort of laying in the hospital and not having anything done to her. Her name was Kim Wong, I remember her, and we examined her, and we talked it over with our people, and they presented a bunch of what they thought were difficult cases to us, and some we accepted, and some really were difficult and not appropriate to be operated on China, but they didn't even present this child to us. They just showed her to us as... And I talked it over with our cardiologist, and we both felt that we could help this child, and we told them that. And when the word came out, she came from a village in China. It's a village. There were like 800,000 people that lived in this in this village. It was about 100 kilometers away. When they heard that this child was going to be operated on, a giant group of people from this village came up to this hospital in Hebei to see what was going on. We operated on the child, and it wasn't a particularly difficult operation. It was an operation that we just could do that they weren't aware of. And when I finished operating, I came out, and when you come out and you talk to a family, especially a child, there's sometimes 10 members or 12 members. I walked out into the hall, and the entire fourth floor is flooded with these 500 or 600 people from this village that had come to see the results of this child.
From a parent's perspective, how can we deal with children who are going to have surgery in a hospital? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Today, we're very fortunate to have again as our guest Dr. Amram Cohen, Chief of Cardiovascular Surgery and Head of Pediatric Cardiac Surgery at the Wolfson Medical Center in Holon, Israel. Dr. Cohen is a United States native. We call him Ami. He is also the driving spirit of the Save a Child's Heart Project in Israel. He has 2 teenage children. We're so glad you could join us again, Ami.
Thank you for having me back.
Ami, how do parents know that their children have heart disease? We hear the stories of all these parents who bring their kids to the clinic and so forth. How do they know that that's what it is?
Well, the children in the third world, it becomes pretty obvious just with time. It's very obvious that children are either blue or they can't eat or they simply fail to grow. But for children that are born, let's say, in the Western world, it's actually a very good question, because when a child is born, the pressure in his lungs and the pressure in the rest of his body is equal. So that even if he has a hole in his heart or something, they may not know it right away. And the doctors actually may release the child initially as a healthy child. So it's not unusual at all for a child to be released as a healthy child and come back 2 or 3 weeks later with a problem. And the problems that we see usually are either the child cannot eat. When the child has a hole in his heart and there's too much flow going to the lungs or blood going to the lungs, he can't breathe well. And the children, when they try to eat and breathe, it doesn't work. So they stop eating. They stop gaining weight. They breathe very, very quickly. The other possibility is they'll simply turn blue. Those are the two big ones. Some children have not a terrible heart problem, and it won't be obvious right away. But if you have a child that's under the growth curve and continues to stay under the growth curve, one of the problems could, in fact, be a congenital heart problem.
So these are issues to take up with a pediatrician or family physician.
Absolutely. And the other thing is, if the child's released from the hospital and comes back 2 or 3 weeks later with a problem, it's not a reason to lose trust. It's a very normal thing to happen for those pediatricians. It doesn't mean you have bad doctors or anything like that. It's just a fact of the way these things happen. And I think you can be perfectly confident with those doctors. They didn't make a mistake. It's just something that happens because of the change in the pressures in the child's body.
How is something like that diagnosed? With an ultrasound or an X-ray or what?
That's correct. We diagnose it almost all with ultrasound. But if we started ultrasounding every single child that was normal, we wouldn't have much of a medical budget. So we do the children that have symptoms, and they won't have symptoms the first few days. So if they get into trouble 2 or 3 weeks out, the child doesn't seem to be eating well or not breathing well, it very well may be a congenital heart problem, and it's worth bringing them to the doctor.
What can parents anticipate if a child is diagnosed with a problem that is going to require heart surgery?
The heart surgery can really be broken down into three groups of problems. One are straightforward problems, holes in the heart or a blockage going to the lungs, and it's about 80% of the problems. And those children are all going to be cured, and the risk is very small. A second group is a group of complex problems that are fixable, and those children anticipate a rougher course, which we'll go into in a minute, but will end up as normal children. And the last group are the very, very complex problems where we really can't fix the problem and have to palliate the problem. And those children are looking to a difficult life and usually survive to about 20 or 25, even in the Western world. But that's only about 3 or 4% of the children with these problems. With a straightforward problem, you'd usually expect the child to come into the hospital the day either of surgery or the night before surgery. After surgery, he'll be in intensive care unit, usually for 2 days. We'll usually breathe for the child for 1 or 2 days as well to make it easier for him. Not so much because he needs it, but we like to eliminate the pain. And if we give the children drugs to eliminate the pain, then they don't breathe very well.
So that means putting on a ventilator?
That's right. We keep them on a ventilator, but it's mostly because we don't want the children to have to deal with a lot of pain. And then they recover very quickly. Most of them will be home by 5 to 7 days. But they need to be followed closely out of the hospital by their physician to make sure fluid doesn't accumulate around the heart or in the lungs or whatnot. The second group of children are more complex, and they're usually operated on as neonates. And there's a significant risk. The risk of the child not surviving the surgery can be as high as 5 or 10%. They're usually in the hospital for 3 or 4 weeks, and they are usually in the intensive care unit for about a week. And we're talking about problems where there are blood vessels that are backwards or the aorta is not in continuity. It really represents about 10% of the population of children with congenital heart surgery. The last group is a group that we call univentricular hearts, meaning they've only got one ventricle. And no matter what we do, at least with our knowledge today, we can't create a normal cardiovascular system. And those children can lead relatively productive, good lives, but not by any means have a normal life. We do have some of those children that have had children themselves and live and actually go to school and whatnot. But you've got to tell the parents, and the parents have to understand straight up that you're not going to go through an awful lot and then have a normal child. The child's always going to need medical care. And the life expectancy, as best as we can tell right now, is about 30.
Are there any support groups for parents who have children that have heart problems?
There's not many in the Western world. Surprisingly, in the third world, it's much more popular. And the reason being, when you have a child born today with congenital heart disease, the child's usually 7 days or a month when he's getting operated on. So there's not really time to do it. And by the time it's done, the child's a normal child. So there's very few or very inactive groups. There are some, I'm not familiar with their names, there are some groups, but it's not a very active thing because the child either, God forbid, didn't survive the surgery or is a normal child. As opposed to that, in the third world countries where the children can't get help, these families are very close-knit because they see each other at the clinics and they support each other. And the children themselves, you'll see sometimes the 13 or 14-year-old children, when they come to us for surgery, feeling towards the 1 and 2-year-olds like they're their little brothers and sisters, even though they're not really family members. They'll make sure they're clean and make sure they change their diapers and whatnot. So there are more support groups among the third world countries.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion about heart surgery for children and the Save a Child's Heart Foundation.
The excellent new book, Parents as Mentors, by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is a practical guide to bringing out the abilities in your child. Parents as Mentors is available at all bookstores.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Amram Cohen about pediatric heart surgery and the Save a Child's Heart Foundation.
You know, the first children that came from Ethiopia were very ill. Even after we operated on them, we sent them home after 3 or 4 weeks. They were much better, but still they were way behind their growth curve, and they were walking around. They'd still get tired. When we go to Ethiopia, we spend 2 days seeing new patients, and we spend 1 day following up the patients that we've operated on. And the second year we went there, we had 18 children to follow up. So the first 2 days we saw new patients. And the third day we were a little bit late coming to the Children's Heart Fund. They have a small area that they have a building where we see all the children. And it was myself and the cardiologist, Dr. Tamir, and the intensivist, Dr. Khoury. And we show up in the back of this car that we're driving, and we look at the lawn, and there are these kids, and they're running around playing soccer. And they're playing soccer, and they're all dressed in these Israeli shirts that all the Israeli families in the hospital had given the kids shirts and socks. And when they got these Hebrew Coca-Cola shirts on and the Bamba and all the Israeli companies, and they're running around playing soccer. And we're relatively hardened to various things, but this really took us a moment before we could start seeing them. It was a very, very, just a very good moment for us. And you could see it in the family. When I give a lecture, I have one of my favorite pictures is about 18 kids and about 40 parents, and we're all standing together in front of this the Children's Heart Fund of Ethiopia. And they really feel it. When we come to Ethiopia, I mean, the people are very, very welcoming. The press is very welcoming. And I think it's a very positive effect, not only for Israel, but just in terms of the developed world doing something concrete beyond speeches and studies and whatnot. It's relatively small, but it's hundreds of children. And it's also hundreds of families, because as opposed to feeding kids and whatnot, a lot of the children that we deal with are children from what would be considered in their countries middle-class parents, which means that they have a hut. They don't have any electricity or any car. And this one child, they usually have four or five children at least, and this one child is essentially destroying the family, because what happens is the child can't be cured, and the father's working and the mother's working, and then this child starts turning blue or coughing up blood, and the father's got to put this kid on his back and walk 2 days to a hospital. The hospital can only help him very temporarily, and this repeats itself every couple of months, and it just drags these families that have reasonable lives otherwise down. And what we do is very concrete. I mean, we take 4 hours of work and then 3 weeks in Israel, and this child comes back healthy, and now it's a family that can somehow manage to make a decent life. So we really view that what we're doing is really giving families that are already helping themselves, just giving them the extra push they need to have a reasonable life.
And these children become productive members of their communities.
Very much. We get a lot of letters back from these children. And some of the older ones, one of them just wrote me that she's entering medical school in Ethiopia. And she wanted to know if I could arrange for her to go to medical school in America.
Oh, my goodness.
Wave your magic wand. Yeah, she is entering medical school in Ethiopia. One of the doctors we trained, by the way, wanted more training. Is in training here at Howard, he's actually a formal resident. I mean, we don't really give them any certificates. We give them training for a year. But he's now a formal resident in surgery at Howard University.
What's been your greatest challenge in your work?
Well, probably the hardest thing would be dealing with these kids that we can't get to. I mean, that is really heartbreaking. We are constantly under pressure to bring more and more kids, because we constantly know that there are kids waiting for surgery. And that's probably the most difficult type of the thing. But I think the best thing that we're doing, and the thing that we always have to keep in mind, is that our goal is not to operate on the children in Israel. It makes for great satisfaction for us, and it makes for great stories. I mean, we constantly come home smiling when we take care of these children. But there, for example, while we operated on 130 children in Israel last year from around the world, we trained somebody 3 years ago, and he operated on 100 children in Ethiopia. So we view that the real challenge is to get them working in their own countries. And it's a very difficult challenge because, in essence, you get addicted. I mean, you're here, you're taking people that really have no chance, and you're helping. And you want to do it, and you want it to be you and this, but the truth of the matter is that what we really have to do is have them be able to do what they're doing. And we go constantly keeping that in perspective is very important. So a lot of our emphasis is put into developing our partner sites. And we've been pretty successful. Like I said, in Ethiopia, from no surgery, they're doing about 100 a year. Two sites in China. There's a site near Mongolia called Lanzhou. It's in the province of Ganzhou. When we got there, they were doing 30 cases a year. Today they do 140 cases a year. Not only that, but we've got the University of Minnesota involved too. So that they are...
In the Chinese program?
Yeah, yeah. One of the nice things that has happened, I guess I told you before the show and I'll say it now, there's a number of groups around the world that are trying to do things like this. University of Minnesota is one, HeartLink is one in Minneapolis, Oakland Children's Hospital, Emory, and each one of them does a small amount. We're making efforts to consolidate this, to try to organize the effect. We're truly the only department that's actually devoted to this totally. Everything else is They do the regular workload, and then they do 5 or 6 pro bono cases. Our department is actually unique in that it's dedicated to helping these kids in the third world. We do the Israeli patients we have, but the bulk of what we do and the bulk of our emphasis is how to train these people, how to help them to help themselves. So when we went to China, we realized that we were already in 2 provinces in China. It was more than we can handle. So we talked to HeartLink, which is a group in Minnesota. And the first year, we went together to Lanzhou. And now they're going by themselves this year in May. And we alternate years because we still work in Hebei. The other thing that sort of we did for the first time just 2 weeks ago is a lot of times it's very hard to take an entire team of surgeons and nurses away from a hospital. So experimentally, 2 weeks ago, we did the first thing where we took the surgeon from the University of Tennessee and the perfusionist from the University of Minnesota and the anesthesiologist and the nurses from our group. And we formed an international group, and they worked in Lviv in the Ukraine for 10 days, and they operated on 8 children. It was very, very successful because, number one, they were successful. They enjoyed very much meeting each other. They learned each other's techniques. At the same time, none of the other programs were disrupted. We continued to work in our home environment while this was going on. So that may be something that we're going to be doing more and more, sending international teams. And everybody's getting to know each other that works in this field, so it's not so hard to intermix the teams.
What have you accomplished by establishing this program, the Save a Child's Heart program in Israel?
Well, I think number one, we've helped 450 families. And we've been able to help the children, children that would not have survived. No matter how philosophical or what, that's got to be the most important thing that we do by any standard. But one of the things that we've been able to do is there's a lot of ability within the developed world to help in this field. And people have shied away for it because the logistics are so scary and nobody knows what they're going into in the third world. And they're afraid that their attempt will just fall short. And I think one of the important things that we've done is that we've established that the people in those countries are just as concerned as we are about these kids, and they're just as interested in us helping these kids as we are, and that it can be done for reasonable budgets. I mean, our budgets run between $2 or $3 million, which for saving 450 children is a very reasonable thing if you consider the training and developing programs within those countries. So it's very feasible. You're going to get reciprocated if you choose your partners wisely. And it's really a challenge to other programs to get involved in this. It's a field where there's no competition. I mean, you don't have to come in and shove somebody else out. It's something where you can, if anybody wants to join in, they're more than welcome to join in. There's more than enough room to help.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion about heart surgery for children and the Save a Child's Heart Foundation. For an audio cassette copy of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015. Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Amram Cohen about pediatric heart surgery and the Save a Child's Heart Foundation. What are the future plans for Save a Child's Heart Foundation?
Right now we have immediate plans, and the immediate hope we do is to expand the number of children we're operating on within our hospital to 250 a year. We're doing 130 right now. I have a surgeon that just finished training in Michigan that's going to come and join us, which is going to be a very big boost. And we'll be able to without enlarging the hospital, enlarging the staff, we'll be able to simply double the number of children we're helping. And that's the immediate plan in terms of in Israel itself. We have a large number of countries that are asking to join in what we're doing. From here, I'm flying to a new province in Nigeria to start working with the province of Niger. We work with a different province right now. The University of Massachusetts and our group are going to be working in Haiti together in November, and we've been asked to come and screen children in Cuba as well. So we'll be expanding to 10 countries. We've started an academic side to this and started studying how to effectively do this. We'll have by the end of the year over 500 children and 10 different sites, and there's a lot of academic work that can be done in how to deal with these children, how to effectively help these children, how to train the people from these countries. so that we're hopefully turning Wolfson Medical Center into a center for this, that other universities and other programs can draw from the experience and work parallel to us in these countries. One other story that really illustrates how desperate some of these parents are for getting help. We have a policy that if a child is under 4 months of age and has a very complex problem and has to fly, we can't operate on that child because we simply can't fly very sick neonates through the airlines. If they come from the Palestinian Authority, then we can go ahead and operate on them because they're very close by, and we do a large number of neonates from there. We went to Moldova, and we saw a clinic, and in this clinic was a little boy named Vasily, and he was 2 months old. He had a very complex problem. He was very blue. And we examined him, and we explained to the mom that, you know, we can't help. We just can't bring him to Israel. He's too small, and he won't survive the airplane ride. And she cried, but she thanked us for seeing the child. And that, I thought, was it. Well, a month later, I went to Lod Airport, which is in Tel Aviv, to go ahead and receive two children from Moldova. And I was being paged overhead in the airport, and I was dreading what we always dread is some child will get there very, very sick. And I ran and I saw the two kids that we'd accepted, and they looked fine. So I figured whatever it is, it's an administrative problem and talking and whatnot, it'll get straightened out. What I didn't see was that behind these two kids, Vasily's mother had sold her farm and bought a ticket to come to Israel with the hope that maybe somebody would help.
If she got there.
If she got there. She was really holding a very, very ill, almost dead child in her arms. It was blue. And, of course, the airline people were panicky. And I guess this illustrates what the team, and I really didn't have a chance. We have 70 people that are all volunteering for this. This is not by any means one or two people that are doing this. This is a group of 70 people that are all working. It was late on Thursday night. And he had to go to the operating room right away. The team came with absolutely no questions at all. And we couldn't actually fix Vasily's problem so he could survive. And we did a palliative operation. It would hold him for a while. And he was very, very ill. He was in the ICU for 3 months. And he got out of the ICU, and we sent him home. And about a year and a half later, we start getting letters from his mom that he's turning blue again, which would be expected. And we sat down among ourselves and said, we might as well invite him because
she's going to bring him anyway. Right.
She's going to sell whatever else she has to sell.
Right. Better we know when he's coming than he just show up on our doorstep. And he came back, and he underwent a very complex operation. He's a normal child today. He's now 3. She went home about 3 weeks after Passover. And she told me that, you know, we were having the holiday of freedom. You know, she heard it. Living in Israel, they get all the concepts and everything in that. And she said, there's very few things related to freedom as much as being freed from having to take care of a child that's hopeless. When you I'm going home with nothing, but I've got a child now that's healthy, I'll be okay.
So, oh, my goodness.
He's always been sort of a landmark that I think demonstrates exactly what we're doing.
How can our listeners learn more about Save a Child's Heart?
Save a Child's Heart has an office in Washington, D.C. The website is www.saveachildsheart.com. I'll repeat it, www.saveachildsheart.com.
Well, you've certainly done a lot for our listeners in terms of letting us know an awful lot more about heart surgery for children and Save a Child's Heart Foundation. So we thank you for coming, Dr. Cohen.
Well, I've enjoyed being with you, and thank you for the opportunity.
Our gift for our first caller today will be an autographed copy of our new book, Parents as Mentors. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573. That's 1-800-791-8573. We look forward to hearing from you. We'd like to send you Parents as Mentors. The book is available at all major bookstores and through the web. To order tapes of any show, send $5 as a check or money order to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015. That's Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
You can also reach Parents Perspective through your local station or by email to parentsper, that's P-A-R-E-N-T-S-P-E-R, at AOL.com, or again, call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573. To learn more about us and our book, Parents as Mentors, visit our website through our shortcut address, http://i.am/parentsperspective, all one word, http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.